Hoopball Podcast listeners. Are you a fantasy expert and want to write or podcast for Hoopball? Do you have aspirations of covering a team? Are you a master of sales and want to earn some cash on the phones? Well, we've got good news. Hoopball's recruiting. If you think you have what it takes, hit us up at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or by emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com. Again, that's at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com.
The following is a Hoopball presentation.
What is going on? This is the Hoopball Clippers podcast. Brandon Marcus here. Glad to have you with us. Recording this one on a Friday, late afternoon, early evening in Los Angeles, as it has been a wild 48 hours in the NBA. We last recorded the podcast after the Clippers lost game four. There were more questions than answers as to what was going on with this Clippers team. The Clippers responded by absolutely destroying, dismantling, crushing the Dallas Mavericks in game five, scoring over 150 points. We saw PG back, which was great to see. Kawhi was tremendous, and the Clippers team just really took advantage of a Dallas team without Kristaps Porzingis. And now we know that Porzingis will not be involved the rest of the series, as he does have a knee injury. It just really sucks that both these teams are not going to be at full strength facing each other, as Patrick Beverley obviously is still hurt. We'll get into Beverley a little bit later in this podcast, as today's pod is going to be with Jovan Buha of The Athletic. So we'll chat about Pat Bev, but no KP means the Clippers should be able to take advantage and win game six. Remember, they lost game four with no Porzingis, but I think the Clippers have figured something out, and some eye-opening stuff after that game five win. We saw a very emotional Doc Rivers talk, obviously, about what's been going on with racial injustice, and then we saw the Bucks walk out. But on the other side of things, apart from Doc Rivers, which was incredibly powerful, we also saw Paul George, and he opened up about how the bubble has really gotten to him, and he is down in the dumps, and it's been very difficult for him mentally, and he's needed to see somebody to talk about it, and he just didn't feel like he was there in games two, three, and four. And we're going to talk a little bit about mental health with Jovan as well, because you think with these guys, they have a lot of money, so what do they have to worry about? They're just like me and you, man. You can go on Twitter, and I've been victim of this myself, and you can criticize a player, but you don't know what they're going through. You don't know what's going on in their family life. You don't know what's going on with them. And to criticize them just because you have this open platform on Twitter or anywhere else, frankly, it's obviously what a fan does. Fan is short for fanatic. But then again, we really need to start considering others, because with Paul George, clearly there was something going on that was affecting him. Everyone was criticizing Paul George, saying the trade should have never been done. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Gallo should be on the Clippers. And PG responded and showed why he was a top three MVP candidate last year. So credit to Paul George, because it's not easy to speak up about those types of things. I know people who have struggled with anxiety and depression, and to speak about that, my hat is tipped to Paul George, and I know it's affecting many other players in the bubble. So good on Paul George for stepping up. It's very impressive that he was able to do that and felt strong enough to do that. So I'm very happy about Paul George. Hopefully this is just the start of him blossoming into playoff P, and he demolishes his opponents. He becomes that guy that is the Robin to the Batman of Kawhi. That's what we need to see, and I think it's very important to see that going forward. One more note before we get to Jovan, and that is a announcement that came today from the Los Angeles Clippers, and there's been a lot of talk about voting recently, over the last couple of days especially. The Clippers did end up buying the Forum. Steve Ballmer went and bought the Forum because he needed to have that area in order to build his new arena because there was that legal fight. And with the Forum, everyone was wondering what was going to happen to it. Well, it's going to become a voting site, which is very important. So that was just announced today, I believe from October 24th to November 3rd. You can drop off your ballot there, and also you can vote in person on November 3rd as well. So kudos to the city of LA. There's Dodger Stadium, and now there's the Forum where you can go ahead and vote. One more thing before we get to Jovan Buha, and that is to tell you, of course, about our friends over at Manscaped. 2020 has been the year of things happening that are completely out of your control. But there's one thing you can control, and that's shaving your you-know-what. Our sponsors at Manscaped are here to remind you to do so. We have talked about that one time where, you know, you try and take the scissors to that private area, and you snip, and it's never a good thing. Well, Manscaped wants you to groom better and groom cleaner and safer. The Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is a premium electric trimmer that's designed to give you a confidence boost through body image. And how do they do that? How do you take a razor, an electric razor, and make it so that it's safe? Well, they have a ceramic blade and skin-safe technology. It's designed to reduce nicks or tugs on your fellas down below. It's also waterproof. So if you want to take it into the shower so you can make things a little bit cleaner, you can do that. There's an LED light that shines in that area to make sure everything is nice and precise. They also just released their Shears 2.0 Nail Kit, which is the perfect add-on to their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. The Nail Kit allows you to pluck your eyebrows and trim your nails in style. So they're taking care of your grooming needs all over the place. Go to manscaped.com and check out these life-changing products. I mean, I'm telling you, these friends over at Manscaped, they have got you covered. So what do you have to do? All you have to do is make sure you go to manscaped.com and enter the code HOOPBALL20. That is 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Now let's go and talk some hoops with Jovan Buha. Really glad to have this guy back on the podcast. You can currently read him on The Athletic. His most recent article is entitled After Family Dialogue, Clippers Patrick Beverley, Eager to Play and Pioneer. He is Jovan Buha. You also see him on Fox Sports back when they allowed people into arenas, but now he just has to sit at home and watch the games like the rest of us. What's it been like, man, to have to report while you have not been in Orlando doing so?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. Of course. And it's definitely been an adjustment, just the whole process of, I think I had watched like two or three games from home this entire season prior to the hiatus. So, you know, I was used to traveling where the team traveled and being in the arena and the locker room and, you know, having those conversations with people. So that was definitely an adjustment. And, you know, I think the access has obviously been much different. It's been harder to have those conversations with people. I think it's a lot easier to ignore people over text or DM or the phone. So, you know, whereas when you see people in person, it's just easier to have, you know, conversations. So I think that's kind of been the biggest adjustment overall. I think watching from home is actually better for like processing the game itself. I always actually kind of prefer consuming the game at home. It's just harder, you know, it's everything besides the game itself that is advantageous to actually be in an arena, in a locker room, and that interaction that you can only get there. So it's definitely made the job harder, no doubt. You know, I think it's harder to have unique stories. Mm-hmm. I think as you've seen, aside from, I would say, like the newsbreakers, everyone's content has kind of been relatively similar, and I don't think there has been as interesting of stuff over the last few months. I think there's been some COVID related stuff, and obviously there's been a lot of social justice and racial equality stuff that's come up, but in terms of actual like basketball stories, I think you've seen a little bit of a decrease in that. you know, from where it normally is when we're in arenas and stuff. So that's definitely been an adjustment, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But just trying to make the best of the situation and really still figure out ways to come up with interesting angles.
Yeah, it's a lot of rehashing what you heard in Zoom press conferences with guys like Doc Rivers. And you've been able to kind of try and separate a little bit by watching some film and getting into the actual X's and O's a little bit when you have your takeaways after each game. So I think that's one thing I know that you're trying to do to separate yourself. It's not easy to do, man. When you go to journalism school, they don't teach you how to cover a team from miles and miles away via Zoom. And it's been a weird adjustment for sure. And speaking of media sessions, there was one today with Doc Rivers and Patrick Beverly discussing the wild 48 hours that has been the last 2 days. I mean, we saw the Clippers dismantle Dallas in Game 5. Then we saw Doc just completely fall apart and show all of his emotions that he clearly did not want to show before Game 5 when he said, I'll talk to you guys after the game. And we saw PG just become very emotional, just show all of his emotions about the anxiety and depression. So the last 48 hours now with all the social justice, and today Doc talked about that a little bit. What were your biggest takeaways from today? Because we heard from a couple of players. I know there's been some rumors. I just mentioned your article when I brought you in here about Patrick Beverly and what he may or may not have said to Michelle Roberts. So what are your biggest takeaways from what you heard today?
I think my biggest takeaway is just how exhausting this process was. Doc had a really good quote about he felt that the players just needed a break. That, you know, with everything that has been going on, you know, you start with COVID and then you continue with all of the, you know, just racial inequality issues we've had in this country, you know, the police brutality we've dealt with, and, you know, specifically the George Floyd situation, which, you know, obviously was a really big, an important matter for many people in the NBA. And that is now continued into the bubble where you have all these people that have been isolated and are away from their families. And, you know, just kind of that, even guys have talked about how weird it is to like play a game and then see your opponent after the game out. Like, you know, normally under normal circumstances, you might see a guy when you're leaving the arena for like a second, but you're not at the same, you know, you're rarely at the same hotel as another NBA team, let alone another like seven NBA teams, as, you know, they were split into like groups of seven or eight. So just that dynamic has been weird. And then you have, you know, recently the Jacob Blake police shooting. And I think that clearly was like the tipping point here, where you had the Bucks talk about it. You had the Celtics and the Raptors, then you had Doc, and several Clippers come out and talk about it. And, you know, just kind of Doc's comments over the last few days, it's just been clear how exhausting this has been for people, how tired they are of having these conversations and just having to reiterate the same points that feels like it should be kind of common knowledge and common practice for people. And, you know, and I also thought Doc had a great quote today about, you know, it's not the NBA's job to save the world. It's the NBA's job to be a part of the world. And they've done that so far, and they're trying to do as much as they can. But it is interesting that, you know, a lot of times these kind of burdens fall on NBA athletes or Black athletes. And, you know, it's kind of on them to be the role models, to set the example of how we should act or what we should do, when that should really fall on society at large and politicians. And it's bigger than just athletes or sports. So, you know, it's definitely been an interesting 48 hours because, as I told you before this podcast, like I thought there was a period there we weren't going to have it, you know, NBA basketball again, until probably 2021. So, you know, there's been just so many emotions, so many back and forths. And you had the Pat situation, which today he kind of danced around a little bit. You know, he didn't deny it, but he also just said at the end of the day, we got the result we wanted. So I'm happy about that. So, I mean, I guess reading between the lines, you could either take that as him sort of admitting it, or you could just take that as him not addressing it. Like, I don't, it just depends your point of view, but, you know, it has been an insane, again, 48 hours going back to Doc's comments, then PG being vulnerable and opening up. And then you had Doc's interview with Fox Sports, and then you had the interviews today. So, it's been in, like you said, with going to journalism school, like, this is not what you really learn, you know, or, you know, especially going to like sports reporting.
Yeah.
Obviously politics and social issues have always been intertwined with sports, but, I think my last like three stories have had nothing to do with basketball. And that's really been, you know, the interesting part, but that also means that the message is getting out there, and the players and coaches and everyone involved with the NBA is doing a good job of making that the prominent storyline right now, and not basketball, which I think for the time being, it should probably be more of the social justice stuff.
And that leads me into my next point, and that is that everyone was saying from the outside, okay, so they're going to either boycott or strike, however you want to look at it, these two games or these 2 days. Now what's going to happen after that? Like, is there anything that's going to happen from it? Like, people from the outside that were quote unquote haters were saying, okay, cool, we gave in after a day or two, now go back and play basketball. And we're already seeing changes. I mean, Ballmer announced today, I mentioned in the intro, that the Clippers will have the forum as a place you can go and vote, and you can go and drop off your ballot, you can go and vote. And we're seeing several other arenas. I believe MSG announced today as well that they'll be a polling place. So yes, they missed a couple of days of basketball, but we're already seeing changes because of this. And this is going to be a continued conversation, not something we can solve in one day. And that's why personally, I thought it doesn't make sense for them to go home. Because if you go home and you don't continue playing basketball, then everyone forgets about you, because there's still baseball and football and hockey. And this is a way now where they can continue to make change. And I believe even Milwaukee, they're reconvening their state assembly on Monday. So already we're seeing changes, Jovan.
Yeah, I mean, you as you mentioned, you know, every NBA team that owns and operates their arena property is now going to speak with local officials and work with them to turn their arenas into voting centers for the 2020 presidential election. You have a social justice committee that the NBA is going to be starting. It's kind of unclear if it's going to be on a team by team basis, or if they're just going to be a at large committee for the entire league. But players are going to be involved, coaches are going to be involved, team owners are going to be involved. And I think you're just seeing, like, I mean, that was kind of the thing with all of this. You know, I felt like it was the players really just saying, we've had enough, and for us to continue, we would like to have even more change. And it's not just about putting up money, because that's what the owners had already done, you know, committing that $300 million collectively over the next 10 years for, you know, racial causes and social causes and police reform and different stuff. Like, they'd already put up that money, but now it was more about like taking action and what can we actually do aside from just committing, you know, finances to it. What can we do that's actually tangible and you know, makes us feel like we're involved with this. So I definitely agree. And you know, the Clippers will have the forum. I'm guessing, you know, even though they don't own Staples Center, the Lakers will do something, or, you know, even though the Clippers don't own Staples Center, the Lakers will probably do something with Staples Center. So overall, I mean, I think the players definitely got what they wanted, or most of what they wanted. I mean, it's still unclear, kind of, you know, we'll never know fully what they want unless someone came out and kind of said it. You know, there's been reports and stuff of what was said in the meetings, and you know, we won't know the full picture unless someone like LeBron or something comes out and actually discusses, like, these were the things we wanted, these, you know, and this is what we ended up getting. So, you know, this is maybe the stuff that's still in the balance that we got to figure out. But, you know, barring that, I think for the most part, it seems like they got some change, they got some action, and that's what they had been asking for. So I do think, as Pat said today, as Doc said today, and as others have said around the league, like, you know, the players protesting was not pointless. It was not fruitless. Like, they ended up getting something out of this. And I think it's pretty admirable.
And money only does so much. I mean, sure, you can say you're going to give money to X cause and Y cause, but the question is, what comes of it? And I think this is actual action that we're seeing when you have state government that is agreeing to meet and talk about bills. Now the question is, will they actually do something about it? And then you're also having these voting centers, because it seems like voting is really one of the number one priorities. And something that blew my mind was that when Doc mentioned in the meeting that apparently only about 20% of the NBA players were registered to vote. Like, that is something that completely blew my mind. And when you say that the platform, really the number one thing is voting, that really seems to be what they're going to be focusing on over the next couple of months is voting. And that 20% really, I was very surprised by that number.
Yeah, that's incredibly low. You know, I would have guessed, obviously not 100%, but right, somewhere maybe in that 60 to 80% range. So yeah, hearing that is, you know, and of course, like, this is not an excuse, but there are a lot of, you know, a lot of NBA cities tend to go blue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think maybe there's an element of like players not feeling like their, you know, vote counts. Or, you know, I know, for example, like, if you're in California, you know, you might feel like, you know, regardless of if I vote or not, you know, it's probably going blue. It's, you know, historically a very Democratic state. Obviously, that's not the right mentality to have. And you should still be participating and registering and voting anyway. But I would guess that would probably be the reason behind a lot of players not voting. You know, and obviously the league is, you know, disproportionately Black, and you know, as LeBron has said, you know, publicly, as Doc has said, like, you know, the voter suppression across the country is a really big issue right now, and has been a really big issue for decades. So that's something that, you know, we got to figure out and fix. So I don't know how much I want to hold it against the players, because I saw some people criticizing them, and I just think it's like, you know, it is what it is. And as long as more guys end up registering and voting, like, that's the progress you want to see. So I do think it's, you know, that was a surprising number for sure. But it does seem like people are starting to take it more seriously. And as long as that number, you know, gets up closer to, you know, 100% at some point, like, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. And Doc made a point yesterday during his interview with Brian that, you know what, sure, everyone thinks the president's the most important, but it's actually really the least important when you look at local government. He said that is really important. So sure, you might have a state like California that's most likely going to be blue, but there are so many other things that are important to vote on. I mean, even from the local government to the props. I mean, there's going to be a prop on the ballot in November about Uber and Lyft, and that's stuff that definitely affects these players. So that's something that's important that I'm glad they're doing. And something that kind of came to mind, Jovan, as we were talking, is with all of this going on, it brings a lot back to the Donald Sterling Clippers and how Doc handled that and the emotions of a team and being able to continue playing basketball with your minds clearly somewhere else. I'm curious to get Doc's take on what it's like now versus then in preparing for a game, and how similar it may or may not be. Because I know this affects, obviously, everybody as opposed to one team. But that's something that just came to mind. What do you think of that? Do you think that's completely reaching somewhere? Or do you think there's some legitimacy to that?
I think there are some similarities for sure. I would say the difference between then and now was obviously, you know, that was specific to the Clippers.
Yeah.
So I think there was a lot of pressure, you know, kind of thrust onto them randomly. And, you know, I actually remember I covered that game just kind of randomly. Like I was going up to cover the game. And then as I was going up, I remember the news breaking. And so if my recollection is correct, that was a Friday night when the TMZ story broke, and the game, I want to say, was Sunday morning. So it was like an ABC primetime game. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, was just kind of a whirlwind of like a 36-hour period where, you know, Docs talked about it. I don't know if you saw the Blackball documentary on Quibi, but, you know, they had CNN there. Like, it became more, and, you know, if you're a Clipper fan, you remember that. Like, it was not just like the biggest sports story leading ESPN. It was leading CNN and, you know, Fox News and MSNBC and every major channel had, you know, this was the story at that time for those couple days there. So, you know, and then of course the, you know, Silver banning him. But I think, you know, so I also think the difference, and Matt Barnes actually talked about this on The Jump yesterday, was that, you know, I think players were still figuring out their power. And, you know, the player empowerment era was in its nascent stage. And, you know, LeBron has kind of led the way on that. And, you know, with the decision and different stuff he's done. But like that was still within the first few years of that. And I don't think we had seen players as fully comfortable as they are now. I mean, that was only 6 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. But I do think there was a difference in how players yielded their power. And that to me would be the biggest difference is I think now, like if this happened, you know, if we're in this exact same situation 6 years ago, I don't know how different it is with the players, but I do think within the last few years, especially players have become more emboldened. They have taken more, you know, leadership and ownership, just kind of over their own careers and social media and kind of how they handle things. And, you know, I think you've just seen that across the board.
Yeah. And of course you would never see, by the way, you would probably never see a team shut down the league like they did with the Bucks. I mean, that's one thing that we're seeing now is not only did these guys show, hey, we want to make changes, but they also proved to the owners, hey, we can shut down this league anytime we want if something isn't done. So I think that's something they showed as well.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'm saying with the Dolan Sterling stuff is just playing basketball. And if there's any coach that's suited to getting his team ready to play basketball after all this, it's Doc, right? Yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. You would assume.
Yeah. I mean, I think again, I think that with that situation that they had such a quick turnaround where it happened on a Friday night and they had to be ready by Sunday morning. And they clearly will not, you know, we're not ready.
Right.
They lost that game by 20 plus. They got their butts kicked. Like it was brutal. This situation, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a gap in between, you know, the Jacob Blake shooting was, you know, Sunday. So it's already been a week for them to kind of, you know, diffuse. I don't even want to say diffuse some of the emotions, but, you know, obviously a lot of guys were very emotional those first few days. And anytime a tragedy happens, you do kind of see the more visceral reaction those first few days. And not to say that's going to go away, but I do think it definitely is more emotional the closer you are to it. So now you're going to be basically a week from that. Then you're also going to be a few days from the players meeting on Wednesday. So I do think guys are going to have a little bit of a time to collect their thoughts, calm down a little bit, regain their focus, regain sort of like zeroing in on the game plan. And on top of it, everyone's dealing with it. It's not just specific to one team. So I do think the Clippers, you know, will handle it better than they did, I guess, in the Warriors situation with Sterling. But, you know, it's hard to say, right? Like, we don't know. You know, obviously, you know, Pat was a key member in the players meeting. Kawhi, Lou, Marcus, these are the guys Doc was kind of singling out today. And, you know, we saw PG talk about it. We saw Trez talk about it. So, like, this has clearly affected this Clippers team. And they've been one of the more outspoken teams on social justice issues, on racial issues. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it affects them more than it affects Dallas. I don't know. But, you know, I do think, to your point, like, if anyone is in the position to resolve this or make it, at least get them ready to play, it's Doc.
Yeah, and on the basketball side of things, as we transition to Game 6, and you look back at Games 4 and 5, there was this narrative after Game 4 that maybe this is going to be Doc's most important game is Game 5 after they lost Game 4, and everyone was clamoring for more Zoo on Twitter. They were clamoring for less Reggie Jackson after Reggie Jackson was on the floor for that Luka three. And there was a lot of heat on Doc. And then all of a sudden, you have 48 hours later, you have PG, who becomes the PG we thought he was, and he became very vulnerable after the game. You had Doc, who was very emotional after the game and coached his team to a huge victory. It's one thing that we're seeing in basketball is so much can change from game to game. And in particular in the series, it seems like the narrative is changing every single game, which is so wild. And it's partly unfair because you need to be able to realize that a series is going to have ups and downs. And at the same time, there are certain things that we can see at home, like, hey, Zoo's having an impact in the series. He should probably play more than 20 minutes. And that type of stuff, I think, is more fair. How weird has it been from your point of view to see this series just have the ups and downs and a guy like Doc be basically on the chopping block after game four, and now he's heralded after game five, not only for the Clippers win, but the way he's handled his team on and off the floor?
I feel like it's the nature of fans. It's the nature of the current news cycle, debate shows, podcasts, radio. And I also think you got to factor in COVID and everything that's going on, you know, socially right now, which is, everybody is, I think, cooped up and wound up a little bit and on edge. And then you have, all of the social and racial issues going on. And I think that that's also made people, angry and upset and sad and hurt. And I just think, people are more emotionally charged than usual. So I think there has been a lot of overreaction. I think for Clipper fans specifically, with the Lob City failures, for lack of a better word, or shortcomings or whatever you want to call it, there is that fear, right? Like, I think game six Houston in 2015, like, Clipper fans thought they were going to the conference finals, and then they end up losing that game and then losing game seven. And you have the OKC series, and you have, I think to a lesser extent, like the Portland series, where there's that 24-hour window where they're the Steph gets injured, they're the favorites, and then game four, Blake and Chris both go down. So I think for Clipper fans, there have been so many snake bitten moments recently that them being tied 2-2 and having Pat out and having Zoo not play as much and Luka's showing out as one of the best players in the world, like, that all kind of, there has to be a scapegoat, and people have chosen Doc as the scapegoat. Like, do I think he deserves to be fired if they lose the series, or if they even go to seven? Like, no. Do I think he's coached a perfect series? No. No, I think he's even coached a good series. I think that's kind of debatable. I do think the Clippers have kind of patched over a lot of their deficiencies in this series with their talent, which is undeniably more than Dallas's. But again, to your kind of some of your earlier points, like, Doc was the guy who led them through the Sterling situation. Doc is the guy right now leading not only them, but to a lesser extent, NBA players, as multiple players have come out and talked about how critical Doc was in that player meeting. And has really been one of the only coaches to kind of been singled out and, reported about speaking. So, you take that stuff, you take just his overall career resume. He is a top 10 coach in terms of overall wins, and he's won a championship, and this is one of the greatest coaches in NBA history. There's no denying that. So I think Doc is a lot safer than some people might think. I think that's just a lot of outside noise and people overreacting. I do think there are things that he needs to wake up about and fix and address. And I think there are certain structural things right now where if the Clippers keep this up, they could potentially lose, to the Lakers or to the Bucks if they get to those rounds. But that's something that they're going to have to figure out, as the playoffs progress. And I think right now they're up 3-2. They're in a good position. They're most likely going to win this series next game. And I think people just got to take a chill pill and relax.
And one of the biggest things that everyone keeps talking about is Zoo's minutes and how now we know that KP is going to be out for the rest of the series. And so Zoo becomes even larger because he is someone that has done a really good job defensively and seems to be the anchor for this team's defense. What is it about Zoo that you think is preventing Doc from just letting him loose? Because it seems so obvious to all of us that he has really been the most important part of this team defensively. And the Clippers seem to do well when he does well. And I don't know if it's that he's still underrated in Doc's eyes, or he just, I don't know what the deal is. What do you think the deal is? Because you've watched a lot of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't tell you Doc's psyche because I don't understand it. You know, I've been a big Zoo guy all season. You know, I've written about it. I've talked about it on basically anytime I get asked about him. You know, to me, I think conventional wisdom, if you were looking at the Clippers roster, would probably put him somewhere as like the seventh, eighth, ninth best guy on the team. Where in my honest opinion, and I think this is bore out in the bubble, I think he's arguably their third best player. Like I think Pat is clearly their third most important player. And the record shows that, the on-off numbers show that, even the film shows that, like the drop-off from Pat to Lou or Reggie defensively is so steep that without Pat, they just don't have a credible defender at that point guard spot. But if you're talking about actual like just skill and talent and production and just how good they are overall, like to me, it's like Zoo is already arguably the best offensive rebounder in the league. As a screener, he's already in the conversation for best screener or at least top five screener. For rim protector, statistically, he's a top five rim protector. I don't know if I'd put him that high, but to me, he's one of the best 10 or 12 rim protectors in the league. And you know, some of those guys are on even like the same team. If you want to throw like a couple of the Toronto guys in together, like a Ibaka and Gasol or something like that. So I think overall, like he has these checkpoints where you're like, he's elite in like multiple categories that are really important. And Doc even made the point earlier in the postseason where someone asked him about Zoo and he's like, you know, he's our only rim protector and he's done a really good job this year. And that to me is kind of the thing of, if you just look at the numbers in the series, you watch the film, Zoo changes how Luka plays. Zoo changes how Luka attacks the basket. Like there are multiple possessions every game where Luka comes off a pick and roll, and as he's driving, he sees Zoo and immediately kicks it out, or he steps back, he'll dribble the ball back out, and he will not attack Zoo because Zoo has already blocked him, you know, 5-6 times in the series, has altered, I don't know, a dozen plus shots already from Luka. Like Zoo is, and the numbers bear it out, where, you know, I think he's shooting over 20% worse in the paint with Zoo on the floor. Shooting around 20% worse overall with Zoo on the floor. So Zoo has really affected Luka. And if you look at when Trez is in there or they're going small, it's a layup line. Like Luka's driving, he's attacking Trez, he's attacking Marcus, he's attacking Jermichael. And he's getting to the rim on all those guys. And sure, Trez might get a block every now and then or alter a shot. But for the most part, Luka's getting high percentage looks, pretty much layups or floaters, you know, not very heavily contested, when there's a different big man in there in the middle. So to me, it is rather cut and dry. I think Zoo should be playing 25 to 30 minutes, barring him fouling out. And I don't know why. Now, I will say, if you want to play devil's advocate, the one issue is I think without Porzingis, and even with Porzingis, because he's so perimeter oriented, Dallas is basically playing five out the entire time. So, you know, trying to station a big at the rim is a little bit difficult because they have shooters at every position. You know, if you're putting Zoo on Dorian Finney-Smith or Maxi Kleba, like those guys can burn you and make threes. You don't want to just give them wide open threes the whole game. So while there is like benefit to having him as a rim protector, it is harder, I think, on your rotations to kind of defend a five out system with a guy stationed in the paint. Like that, this is kind of basic, like, you know, you're almost playing four on five on the perimeter. So I do think that there are certain configurations that when Dallas downsizes, that it is hard to play Zoo. But anytime Boban's in the game, Zoo should be in.
Yeah.
And really, most like 75% of Luka's minutes should be matched with Zoo. So Doc has not done that adjustment. I don't really get it. But I think Zoo's really important. And I'm with all of Clippers Twitter in that. I don't think it's a fireable offense. But I do think it is making things harder on the Clippers defense than it needs to be.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our friends over at MyBookie. Sports are back. And you know what that means? It's time to make some money off of the sports. You've got the NBA playoffs. You've got MLB with the postseason around the corner. You've got NHL playoffs. Sports galore. You even have tennis, the U.S. Open coming up. You have the Premier League starting in September. It's time to make some money. And that is where MyBookie comes in. MyBookie, it's so easy. You bet, you win, they pay. They've got up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams. They've got live betting as well. So not only can you bet before the game when you see the odds, you can bet during the game as the games are going. If you see, hey, a team is up by a lot, I don't think they're going to win by that many, go ahead and live bet it. They're accepting bets on all different sports. There has never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%. Plus, they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter the promo code HOOPBALL when signing up. That is the promo code HOOPBALL. MyBookie will match your deposit 100%. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay.
Yeah, interesting. The five out part that you mentioned, that's a really good point, that when you have 5 3-point shooters, there's only so much you can do. But it really is something to watch Luka, and when he sees Zoo, he really does pass it. I mean, it's one of those things that he clearly gets towards the elbow, sees him, and kicks towards the wing. It's just something that he seems to do every single time. So if you're listening to this podcast, something to watch for sure in game number 6. Couple of questions before we let you go from people on Twitter. Dan asked, we mentioned obviously in the beginning about Paul George, and so he came out and he opened up after the game about how he was having anxiety, he was having some depression of being in the bubble, and then he really didn't feel like he was there for games 2, 3, and 4. So the question is, what can PG's situation teach us about athletes at large? And it really is, I mentioned this in the intro before you hopped on, Jovan, that we need to start treating these players just like they're one of us, you know? Like, just because they're playing the game of basketball doesn't mean that they deserve to be attacked in their DMs. They don't deserve to be added all the time on Twitter if they do something wrong. And if they, for example, in fantasy basketball, if they don't win you a title or something and they have a bad game, there are people, it happens all the time in fantasy football. I think we need to start treating these people, these athletes, like adults. And that's my biggest take from that. What do you think PG's situation can teach us about athletes?
I totally agree with everything you said, and this has probably been the heaviest podcast I've ever done.
Yeah.
In terms of content. So it just shows you like everything that's going on right now. I will say with the PG situation, it is really tough because this is, at the end of the day, sports is a performance based industry, yeah, right? Like, you 100%. Know, these guys get these contracts based on their performance. These guys, you know, they play in games based on performance. You start your starters because it's your best, you know, should be your best five-man combination or you know, whatever. The guys closing the games have been the best five players in the games. Like, this entirely is performance-based, you know, with the exception of certain guys that maybe, you know, legacy guys or older stars, whatever. But for the most part, it's very cutthroat. It's very alpha. It's very macho, for better or worse. And, you know, I think with a guy like PG, there was that reaction of, okay, one bad game in the playoffs, like, haha, you know, a few playoff P jokes, whatever. Two bad games. Okay. A little weird. Like, it seemed like he was overthinking things in that second game. And then that third game, it's like, okay, this has clearly like gotten into his head.
Yeah.
He's passing up open threes. He's letting guys close out on him. He has mismatches against Dallas's guards, and he's not exploiting it. And if they're throwing everything at Kawhi, theoretically, PG should just feast on, you know, the weak side defense, because they have been throwing so much attention towards Kawhi. They started even doubling him. And, like, that's where PG, as the second guy, like, has to dominate. But obviously he was going through a lot, and you know, he was seeing the playoff P and pandemic P jokes and stuff on Twitter, and everybody roasting him on First Take and First Things First, and you know, Skip and Shannon and all these shows just going at him. You know, that clearly took a toll on him, and I think what it showed is, like, you know, while on the one hand this is a performance based industry, and like, if you are paying Paul George $35 million as your second guy, like, you do need him to show up in the playoffs and be the number two to Kawhi, because if he doesn't, you might lose in the first round. But we also have to be empathetic and sympathetic to what guys are going through. And I think, you know, kind of you saw a different version of Paul in game five, you know, a guy who clearly had kind of refound himself, looked a lot more confident. You know, I thought was playing with a lot less, you know, hesitance and fear, and just, you know, looked more like Paul George. And then obviously opened up after the game with all this. He was in a dark place, and he had a long talk with Doc. He had, you know, Trez came over to play Madden, and he was talking to his girl and his children. And, like, you know, he had this support system that really rallied around him to get him ready for game five. And I just think, it does show, like, it makes you wonder, kind of looking back in the past, like, how many guys were suffering silently from mental health stuff that they weren't able to properly, you know, discuss in the moment. Because I think the most interesting thing with the whole Paul George thing was, this wasn't like he discussed it in the summer saying, hey, that first round series against Dallas, I was struggling. This was him discussing it in the moment, you know, and we've seen guys like Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan come out and talk about it. But it's often been stuff that was weeks in the past, months in the past, years in the past. It's very rarely been a raw, vulnerable moment that just happened. And I thought that was the really unique thing with PG, was like, this is a guy spilling it in the moment, telling you how he's feeling, you know, anxiety, depression, dark place. Like, this is really heavy stuff. And I think, you know, kudos to him. You know, that was a very brave and courageous thing. And you know, I'm sure he's going to continue to talk about it in the future. And I think it is a really big step where, you know, first it kind of became okay for athletes to talk about it within the last couple of years, but now having someone actually talk about it in the moment, I think that lasting impact could be seeing guys more openly, guys and girls more openly, discuss their mental hurdles and just kind of letting us a little bit into a deeper part of the psyche. And I know some people came out and said they didn't want to hear that, you know, keep that to yourself. Like, I completely disagree with that, and think the more open and vulnerable they can be and want to be, because it has to come from them wanting to share it. Like, that's what we want as, you know, journalists and consumers and fans. And, you know, we want a glimpse into the athlete's life. And if they are struggling, you know, is it just them crumbling under the moment, or is there something deeper there? You know, and that's what I thought Paul did, and that's what I thought was really great about it.
100%. And we can't forget that these guys are seriously in their hotel rooms and all cooped up, and they're reading text messages and they're reading Twitter and they're watching these shows. So we can't forget about that as well. Some quicker ones for you, Jovan. JC asked the status of Porzingis and Beverly for game six. We know that Porzingis is not going to play. Pat Beverly, what are your thoughts on Bev? Do you think he should play game six? Does that make sense? Or do you think the Clippers are better off resting him for a possible game seven / resting him for game one? I think that if he's ready to play, play him. But if there's any sort of risk of re-injuring, I think it makes sense to hold him out for game seven. What do you think?
I'm in 100% agreement with you. I think that you can't mess around in the playoffs. Yeah. Like, that is the one thing that, and that's why losing, I think, a game four is something you do kind of hold against the Clippers, because, you know, had they won that game, this series is, you know, most likely over in game five. You know, especially with a hobble, like, to me, another part of the game five equation, which I think Clipper fans don't want to talk about as much, but Luka, clearly, to me, there was a drop off from game three to game four, even though obviously game four he put up historic numbers. Like, he clearly was hobbled and dealing with that ankle injury. But game five, he looked to me much worse physically. And you know, that's where I think, you know, if you have that 3-1 lead, you probably do win game five. You know, they had obviously had more emotion and motivation in game five coming off of the game four loss and everybody criticizing them, but you probably still close out the series in five. And now during this time, you're just resting, you know, guys are practicing, and you're getting ready for Denver, Utah. But now you kind of dragged out this series, and as evidence of kind of what happened to Luka, what happened to KP, like, you never know when a guy is going to get injured in the playoffs. And obviously it already happened to Pat. He got injured in the seeding games, and that is now translated in the postseason. But like, you don't want to mess around and have more games than you have to. So the people saying rest him into next round, like, I only agree with that if that's what the medical staff is saying. And if that's what the team doctors are saying, he can't play until next series. Okay, then don't play him. But if he can return for game six, if he can return for game seven, if there's a game seven, like, they need him, because, you know, you can't lose in the first round if you're this team, right? Like, it's just, that would be an utter failure this season. So, you know, you don't want to mess around and stretch out a series longer than you have to, because that's how guys get injured. You end up blowing the series, or, you know, potentially closing out a series in five becomes closing out a series in seven. And now the guys are just more taxed and tired. So you just don't want to mess around in the postseason. So I'm completely with you. I think if he's ready, play him. If he's not ready, don't play him. But I don't think you get cute and say, hey, like, we're going to beat Dallas, let's not play Pat. If Pat can play, he should play.
Yeah, agree. One final question from Meyer. Who would you prefer in the second round, Jazz or Nuggets? Both these teams have really had their ups and downs. I'll let you answer this one first, because we've seen glimpses from Donovan Mitchell where you don't want to face him in a matchup. You just saw that with Luka. I'm not sure I want to face Donovan Mitchell in a matchup. At the same time, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic can do similar things. So curious to get your take.
I go back and forth, because heading into the the seeding games, I did a playoff ranking of the ideal to not ideal opponents for the Clippers, and just throughout the playoffs in the West. And I actually had Utah rather third behind the Lakers and the Rockets. I thought Utah was the third worst matchup. And that was even with Bogdanovich out. Mm-hmm. And I was a little worried at first with the way the seeding games went and some of the, you know, just the chemistry stuff still coming out with Rudy and Donovan, and, you know, Mike Conley was going to miss some time. And I was just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy for thinking Utah's this good, but I have felt a little vindicated. And I think this version of them that we've seen so far in the playoffs has kind of been their upside. Like, this was the version, you know, going back, like, a lot of people had them as a 3 or 4 seed heading into the regular season, because they added Bogdanovich, they added Mike Conley. They already had Donovan and Rudy and Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal, and Quinn Snyder's a really good coach. So I thought they already had some pretty good pieces. And then now you're adding, you know, now obviously Bogdanovich is out, but I would say I do think Utah is probably the harder matchup, because two reasons. One, they're better defensively than Denver. Like, you know, what you've seen Utah do to that. I mean, Utah has the best offense in the playoffs. And while they have been shooting the lights out with the ball, and Donovan Mitchell is averaging 38 a night, like, part of that is just Denver's Swiss cheese defense. And, you know, I don't really know what the latest update is with Will Barton or Gary Harris, but if they don't have those two guys, they have no chance at stopping Kawhi or PG. So just looking at it, like, yes, Jokic causes problem. Yes, Jamal Murray causes problems. And the Clippers have not done a good job defending the pick and roll this year. So those two guys can eat in the pick and roll against the Clippers, but I just don't think Denver can defend the Clippers. Whereas Utah, you have Rudy Gobert, the best rim protector in the league. You have Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal, who I think are two tough wing defenders against Kawhi and PG. They're not going to stop them, but I think they can hold their own to an extent. You have a really good coach in Quinn Snyder, which would be my second point of just, I think Quinn Snyder is a better coach than Mike Malone. So who do I fear more making adjustments? I think Quinn Snyder. So I would say between the two, Utah is the tougher matchup, especially when they're playing up to their ceiling, but neither one's ideal. Neither one is going to be easy. I think both would be a 5 or 6 game series. And But I will say, I think Donovan Mitchell, he's averaging like 32 or 33 against the Clippers in the season series. And I don't think they have a great defensive matchup against him. I don't think Kawhi or PG match up very well against him. I think it's probably a Pat Bev assignment. And I don't know. Like, Donovan has really hurt them in the pick and roll this year. So that would be my biggest concern in the Utah series, is just, you know, Donovan continuing to go supernova. But between the two, I would lean Utah, but I do think it's close.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern with Denver is Jokic being able to step out and shoot a three, and pulling Zoo out there. It's very similar to what Porzingis could do. But with Utah, yep, you have Mitchell, who can just go nuts, like you said. And then also, God forbid, Zoo gets into foul trouble against Gobert early on. I think that could be a very big problem for the Clippers. So I think I'd rather face Denver than Utah, just because of that. Man, it's been an incredible pod. We've had some serious stuff we've talked about, some hoops as well. Jovan Buha, at Jovan Buha on Twitter. You can read him at The Athletic. You can also listen to the Clip City podcast. Anything else you want to promote before we say goodbye?
Nah, man, just subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. Subscribe to my podcast if you haven't. And keep it up, man. This is a good podcast. This was fun. And this is definitely, we touched on a lot. We touched on everything. And I had a lot of fun.
Jovan, appreciate it, man. Hope to talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
One of the longer conversations we've had on this podcast, but I think the moment really warranted a deep look into what was going on over the last 48 hours. And just a deep look into the NBA in general. And of course, we had to talk about the series as Game 6 looms large in Sunday. It's going to be on Sunday, 12:30 Pacific time. So we'll see if the Clippers can wrap things up. We'll have Justin Wilson of LA Clippers Film, our usual Sunday guest. He'll be on Sunday, and we'll talk about Game 6. Hopefully, it is the Clippers closing this series out. A big thank you to Jovan for joining the podcast. I'm Brandon Marcus. You can follow me on Twitter at BDMarcus, at HoopBallClips, as well as the HoopBall Clippers podcast Twitter handle. If you can rate and review the podcast, it really would mean a lot. 5-star rating, leave a review as well. Really would help this podcast grow as we try to continue to make sure that you get some good Clippers content in your ears. Until next time, we'll talk to you Sunday, and go Clips!
This has been a HoopBall presentation.